however, is also true. Having found its surefire formula, one still working at the highest ratings levels seemingly possible in television, why would it give it up? Has television, no matter how low, ever been ambivalent about its success? Many books of greater and lesser rage and recrimination have been written by crusaders against Fox News, its founding executive Roger Ailes, and its insidious owners, the Murdochs. These books, not unfairly, take Fox at face value. They are the product of literally watching Fox and judging it for what it says and reacting with appropriate and reflexive umbrage. It is not enough that conservatives like us, Roger Ailes often pronounced as part of his winning formula, but that liberals hate us. The liberal commentary about Fox is part of that counterintuitive ecosystem. Attack it, and it grows. In all of these treatments, Fox is not just a subject, it's the enemy. Journalists have spent decades ably writing behind-the-scenes stories about the snake pit of traditional network and cable television, exposing the Faustian bargain that has been made to be on the air and the merciless backstabbing that gleefully goes with it. And this makes sense. The majority of journalists exist in a professional community with the mainstream media. They understand its pain and its comedy. They have not, however, covered conservative media with a similar professional understanding. These worlds, mainstream media and conservative media, really don't cross. Conservative media has remained the other. The journalist Gabriel Sherman, in his 2014 biography of Roger Ailes, the loudest voice in the room, widely intimated that Ailes's refusal to speak to him for his book was both a sign of the Fox chief's contempt for real journalism and a de facto indication that he was hiding something. This certainly seems supported when, several years after the book's publication, Ailes's long history, never too well hidden, of his mistreatment of women was revealed. As it happened, Ailes was a willing and useful source during the years when I was covering the media business for New York Magazine and Vanity Fair. I knew that Ailes would talk to almost anyone. You really couldn't shut him up. And I offered to arrange an introduction to Ailes for Sherman, who I also knew. Sherman, in the interest of his own virtue, I suppose, failed to take me up on my offer. As I was completing this book, I happened to attend a dinner with various heads of mainstream news channels and several notables from the New York Times. One of the Times people, stressing the dinner party's collective virtue, interrupted the rather sonorous discussion about the various crises in the journalism world, as well as its important or self-important personalities, to ask whether anyone at the table could even imagine a similar discussion taking place among people on the other side. Well, yes, in fact. The discussion would be different only in quality, not kind. Everybody in the news business, right or left, is in a crisis in which they are at the center. For myself, I have always found the people at Fox, including Ailes and its various stars, easy to engage beyond politics, and willing to share their stories of working there. They, too, are conscious of the fickleness of media fate, including their own. This has allowed me to write a different kind of book about Fox, less about what is on the air than what is in its heart or churning in its stomach. Here's a television story of ego, money, power, and the unnatural obsession to be on the air. That it happens to be far-right air rather than television's more familiar middle-of-the-road air changes, I believe, the story less than you might think. All television news operations with zero-sum airtime, if I get it, you don't, are riven by envy and bitter rivalries, some more murderous than others.